You're going to take one for the team by watching the Marvel stuff, and you want me to take one for the team by watching Game of Thrones.
Yes!
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Trailer Junkies, we have episode 8, and this week it's Ted as usual, but we also have his daughter, Audrey. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
Doing great.
You said, I think you said episode 8. I think we're on episode 58.
Did I say 8?
I think so.
Okay, I meant to say 58. Man, you know, like, I guess I can't be perfect every week, Ted. So how are you both this week?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
Ah, wonderful as always. I get to do one of my favorite things I do every week.
That's right. Talk to us. Talk to the Trailer Junkies.
That's it. So last week, we had a pretty cool episode. Just a brief recap. Mm-hmm. We had Marcos Gabriel from Soapbox Films on as an interview. And I hear we have a review or whatever about that or whatever. So Audrey, you're going to read it for us?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's hear the review from our Marcos Gabriel, or one of our reviews. I don't know. Did we get more than one? I don't even know.
This is the most recent review, and it's from one of our listeners, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Really excellent episode. Marcos was articulate, funny, and brought a little sass to the whole thing. He made you step up your game. Like that, he wasn't precious and was willing to say Texas Chainsaw Massacre was influential. Great insight into the industry as well.
Great.
Excellent.
Thanks again, Tim.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks, Audrey, for reading that for us.
No problem.
And for all you other listeners, definitely give us a shout out on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to the podcast.
And you may be read too.
That's right.
All right, Ted, what do you say we get into our beers?
Okay. You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first.
Okay.
So this week, I have another homebrew, and it's a Belgian strong that I brewed. It's about 12%. What wound up happening was, so it's a little bit of an experiment. So what wound up happening was the yeast got a little bit too drunk, I think, and it wasn't, and they weren't fermenting because this one is in the bottle. So what I wound up doing was when I popped a bunch, none of them were fermented after like weeks and weeks in the bottle. So I got champagne yeast. And I dished out a little bit each, and champagne yeast can go as high as like 20% or something before it winds up getting to the point it kills itself off, where the yeast I used probably was at its max at 12%. And that's the reason they weren't fermenting in the bottle.
Okay.
So with that, I put champagne yeast. So let's see if my experiment worked. I'm sure hoping that this is fermented. If not, you're not going to hear a pop. It's not going to be carbonated. We're going to have to take a break so I can go recork it and get some other beer. My rep is on the line.
Here we go.
But we'll find out. So what I did with others, by the way, mm-hmm. in the past, I put them in a closet that's adjacent to the hot water heater. So the closet stays warm. And then all of a sudden, like, yeast love it when it's warm, especially Belgian yeast, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, this was out in the garage in my little fermentation chamber, and it's been cold. So that could be one of the reasons, but I'm not going to make excuses. So let's see. Let's see. Here we go, kids. Oh, there it went. Beautiful. So my rep is still intact. Ooh, listen to that. This one's for Clarissa. I'm going to share with her because it's a big Belgian bottle. Oh, my goodness. Look at the foam, the head. It's beautiful. There you go, Clarissa. That one's for you. Man, my experiment with the champagne yeast.
Does the champagne yeast impart flavors into it?
It might. You know, that's a good question. Honestly, I don't know if it would impart flavors or not. But I'm going to let that head go down because, and I have it in a Duvel tulip glass, by the way.
Nice. Okay.
So, and as you can see, it's kind of a deep amber. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a Belgian strong.
There you go.
13%. Alcohol, and it's sitting at about 33 IBUs.
Wow.
All right. Go ahead, open yours, and then we'll do tasting notes.
Okay. But before I do that, I will note that Audrey is wincing over here at the ASMR stuff that we were doing with that.
Oh, it's such a fetish, isn't it?
So I went with a new beer again, Bitter Brothers Brewing from San Diego.
Bitter Brothers Brewing.
I picked it up because it is I think it's a great marketing piece. The can, another microbrew from California. It's called Prodigal Son, an Amarillo IPA. And it has, you know, normally we read the blurbs on here, but this one has a funny thing where things you can enjoy the beer with, and has a list. And it says, enjoy with curry, tater tots, orange sponge cake, Seinfeld, the one about soup, and your dad. So I thought it was funny. You know, it's another way to be tongue-in-cheek about it. Its appearance, it's gold in color, citrus, especially orange and floral notes, and flavor, fresh orange, pepper, and a clean, bitter finish. I'll be the judge of that. The only thing I don't like about the label is that they have the brothers on the side. I don't know. It's a silhouette of the brothers. It's part of their logo. But on the description of it, they're what is it? They're turned 90 degrees, and they're kind of hanging out in the sky. I don't know. I don't like
it. Yeah, I got you.
But here we go. Always a messy pop on mine.
I hate messy pops. All right, well, while you're doing that,
all right,
I am going to give you my tasting notes on homebrew. This is a Van Kira special. like I said, it's a Belgian dark strong ale, but from what I've already tasted, I mean, definitely rich and malty, kind of sweet. I think it tastes close to the style it's supposed to, or at least exactly like the style. It's very good, actually. Kind of caramely, but like almost, I don't know, like plums and fig.
Wow.
Yeah, almost peppery, too. Yeah, it's very good. It's very good. I would actually buy this if I didn't make it, and I'm not just saying that because I'm the brewer. I'll have to share one with you, and next time you're up or we're down, whatever it may be, I'll bring some.
Awesome.
And how is yours?
Mine is good. Mine's interesting because it's an IPA, but I guess it's on the cusp. It tastes lighter than an IPA. I don't know what the IBUs are, but it's a good solid beer. We'll see how it progresses. I'm not 100% sold on it.
So you're not a big fan right off the rip?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan off the top of it, but...
Okay.
But we will see.
What's it compare most closely to, if you had to say?
I think it tastes more like a wheat, like a white beer.
Oh, okay.
Like a
Belgian white or something?
Like a Belgian white, or like a Blue Moon, or like a Shock Top.
Right, it's one of those kinds. I gotcha.
Yeah, they kind of went over the top with the citrus. When I see citrus in IPA, I think of the Citra hop, and I think they've added some more orange to this.
Well, I was going to say there's the Citra hop, and then there is like orange juice.
Exactly. And speaking of juice, we have Audrey. She was drinking a vintage grape juice, unfermented.
Vintage.
Unfermented wine, as we call it in our house.
Welch's.
Unfermented. Is it filtered or non-filtered?
Is Welch's filtered?
Oh, okay. There you go. All right. So, Ted, what have you been up to all week, man?
So this week I watched the Fire documentary on Netflix.
Yeah. I was going to get into that with what we're watching.
That's what I've been doing this week. Oh, and then also Audrey has, well, I'll let Audrey do her news for this week, what she's doing.
For this past couple of months, I've been working on my school play, a high school musical.
Oh, very cool.
And its opening night is Thursday, the 29th. It's either the 29th or the 30th.
And what is your role in the school play?
I'm a jock and a thespian. Yes.
A jock and a thespian.
No, we asked what your role in the play was, not what you are in your current.
Yes.
So you're playing yourself.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
But we've been doing intense dance practice all week, and it should be a great show.
So does it have like, what, two acts, three acts?
Two acts.
Two acts. And how long is each act?
I would say about, in total, the play shouldn't be over 2 hours, I think.
So about that's a good amount of time. Very cool. And you have, is your role a big role or kind of a small role, medium role?
It's a medium role because I'm one of the lead dancers, and I have a lot of spaces where it's just me and a bunch of people around me when I'm dancing.
Oh, very cool. That's exciting. I bet mom and dad will be proud.
Yes.
We already are proud. Yes, it is on so the opening night is January 31st, and then she has to perform through her birthday weekend. So Friday is going to be her birthday, and then Saturday would be closing night, right?
Yes.
Yeah, nice. How about you, Ted? What's going on in the Mr. Ted Willett world?
So I'm trying to line up more interviews for us. I enjoyed last week immensely. So we want to make sure that we keep on a roll with that, try to get them out to the audience in a timely manner, have a lot of plans for 2019. Wanted to thank all of the listeners that have listened to us over the past year. Welcome new listeners off of last week, since we've kind of added a layer of marketing information to what we do. And just that's about it. I think the Netflix discussion is definitely heating up. I read an article by Ben Thompson.
Yeah, I saw that article.
Which is also part of the Exponent podcast. So he talked about Netflix this week. And I think he has a lot of great insight into that. So it definitely informs and it runs parallel with a lot of my thoughts on how the marketing space and how the media space is developing.
Yeah, I read it too. And, you know, one of the things I enjoyed about it was, like you said, I mean, it's in depth and he gives a lot of good insight into, you know, how things are aggregated and all the various just components of marketing, looking at how studios produce and then get their content to viewers. And it's like Netflix is removing so many barriers on the one hand, but I don't know. You know, we'll have to see. I mean, you probably know the nuances way more than I do based on what he's talking about there, but we could get into that a little later if we want to, but
right. Okay.
Yeah, and we'll save the fire.
Oh, okay, great.
Like, what do you call a fire? Like, there's two documentaries. One's on Hulu.
I've just been calling it the Netflix Fire documentary. As opposed to the Hulu Fire documentary.
Yeah, the Hulu one is like the guy trying to clear his name.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then the next one, the Netflix one, is the social media guy who's like trying to burn him. You know what I mean? Right. So let's, how about we table it there, okay, and cool. Then we'll come back at the end.
All right.
So Audrey, really quick, have you seen this documentary or no?
I have not.
No, this is not fit for 13 or
yeah.
Or 9-year-old consumption.
Right. So, all right then. Yeah, well, at the end, I guess we can dismiss our young lady and then we can get into it. So.
Yeah, we won't talk about the Avion water until the children have left the room.
Right. yeah, and myself, 2 weeks ago now, I know with Marcos, we didn't really get into too much. We wanted to get into his story and his career and what's going on there. So 2 weeks ago now, on Sunday, I'm walking on the hall in the house, bringing clothes to the bedroom from the laundry, and I hear my email across the house go bing, you know, like that Apple email sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, there's the email. I put down my clothes in the bed. I walked back. I go to my email. Congratulations. So I am now in the Leadville Trail 100 mountain bike race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I've been training and doing all that stuff. And I don't know who's familiar with it, who's not, but a brief description is it's 100 miles that starts, well, it's like 104 miles, I think, that starts in Leadville, Colorado, which is the highest incorporated city at like 10,200 feet. And then the race goes up to about 12,600 and back again. It's like an out and back. And I think he still holds the record, but Lance Armstrong, when he was doping. And I don't have to worry about, like, you know, saying allegedly because it's out there. But when he was doping, I think he holds this course record at like 6 hours, 20 minutes or something like that. So I'm just hoping I get under 12 hours and I get my belt buckle.
You win a belt buckle for doing this?
Yeah. So under 12 hours, you get a silver belt buckle, silver smaller belt buckle. Under 9 hours, you get a bigger gold belt buckle. And, you know, probably a thanks for participating t-shirt. I don't know. But yeah, so. And we're going to be, this is August 10th. So I'm probably going to be giving monthly updates, I think, as my training and how things are going. And so far I'm really sore and training's been going all right. You know, so.
So I love this. You shared with me, and we're going to put it on in the show notes, the 55.09 mile trek that you biked, I guess.
Oh, that was yesterday's training ride. Yeah.
Yesterday's training ride. So you went from your house and then you went over to Buellton, then up to Los Alamos.
Yeah. And then back over. I went over a couple mountain passes, a few bunch of big hills, and yeah, just a local ride here in the Central Coast.
Did you run that solo?
Yeah, I did it by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to go to Solvang or Los Olivos or San Inez for some wine or some beer or anything like that while you're riding?
Oh, some of those training rides are in the future. There's two Fig Mountain rides I'm going to do. One is to the brewery and one is actually up Fig Mountain. I'm going to give monthly updates to training. So it's not like a 6-week training program here. It's like more like an 8-month training program. Yeah. So, and then we're going to be, I'm doing a shakedown race, a 63 miler in Tahoe, August 13th. And that's going to be the race that's going to kind of make sure my gear's going good. Clarissa and the boys are going to be my crew, you know, and they're going to be the ones to like give me the food and, you know, take care of all like the, when I get to the aid stations and all that kind of stuff. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I'll do a little plug for a podcast I found, which is the Leadville 100 podcast, or Leadville 100 mountain bike podcast, or I don't even know the title of it. I just Googled it and it popped right up, you know, and I'll tell you that podcast, if anybody else out there is doing this race, that podcast is like amazing. I mean, they tell you like where to do what on the course and
oh, that's so cool.
I'm taking notes.
A podcast.
Yeah.
A podcast that's giving you like all the tips and tricks.
Yeah. Like when you're going down this hill, it flattens out. That's when you want to hit a goo, you know, and then it goes right back up again. And, you know, like, I mean, they tell you like everything, you know, and they get like they interview pro racers. They interview like the guy who started the race, the new company that owns the race. I mean, so it's not just a couple of hacks. I mean, it's like a really solid podcast. So it's cool. It's, you know, like I said, if anybody out there is also racing it, like check out that podcast.
And I think you're going to do a ride along podcast, right? You're going to have a headset on and we'll record you talking about what's happening real time.
Vomiting into my mic. Yeah, no, exactly.
We're not doing that. The 9-hour podcast.
Maybe what we'll do though, that's a good point. Maybe what we'll do is I'll roll up. Clarissa will just have her phone on record. And she'll record our interactions at the feed stations, you know?
There you go. That'd be fun. I'd like to hear that.
And then I'll just like take out a few edits and we could just like drop them in, you know, like we'll do a 2-minute edit thing or something. Maybe we'll, yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. And they'll just be like audio recordings on the cell phone that she'll just have in her pocket and hopefully pick up some, I don't even know. We'll work it.
I'll talk to Clarissa. We'll arrange it. You focus on riding and we'll do the other stuff.
I know. Then Ted rides along with me and he's doing the filming of the documentary footage.
Yes. In a car.
Right. Yeah, there you go. All right. So how about we get to Spider-Man Far From Home?
Yay. That made Audrey smile.
Yes.
Just like Leadville is far from home. So, Audrey, I heard you like this movie for some reason. Is there a young man that you have a crush on?
Possibly. Tom Holland is amazing. Not going to lie.
So, I, you know, Audrey's, you know, telling me all about Tom Holland. And what he has like what is it? Not a society. He has philanthropic endeavors. He's got, you know, millions of followers all over the place. But
yes.
His big thing is him and his brothers.
That is a big part of it. They have a thing called the Brothers Trust. And it's where you can go do like meet and greets and get posters and movies and autographs and stuff from him.
So,
and all the money goes to their fundraising for whatever causes they're working on at the time.
Yes. Like once he went with his brothers and visited a hospital, and then other times they do like meet and greets, and then they give money to charities and organizations and like dog shelters and stuff. Because he has a pit bull named Tessa.
Who is right in the middle of his shirt when you go to the website.
There you go. See?
So it looks like four brothers and a dog. Yeah. So we support charities who struggle to be heard. Wow. That's a pretty cool thing.
It's kind of amazing that, you know, actors these days, they have the ability and the reach and the power. And I guess we'll get more into this when we talk about Fire and like the other side of that. But this is like a good guy. And, you know, I like that he can be a role model and it's okay. And, you know, I think he's one of the best Spider-Man we've had. The only one that tops him for me is is Miles Morales, which is an animated Spider-Man, so it doesn't really fit the exact same bill.
On a side note to that, you know, talking about actors and stuff who do good things, one of the shows on Netflix that I like watching as a photographer is Tales by Light. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they're into season 3, and season 3 started in Bangladesh, and the poverty of these shanty towns and people who live on the rail tracks, and, you know, Orlando Bloom is a UNICEF person, and he is somebody who does, like, you know, stuff for kids and child labor, and he's like kind of a champion for that. And this photographer who does like portraits of children in India and other places where, you know, you have like mine workers in Bolivia and all this stuff of these kids. What he does is, well, the photographer that is, he takes the photos and then they use the photos in their UNICEF publications. But Orlando Bloom, he uses his kind of platform just like Tom Holland. Orlando Bloom does very similar things, but he does it for UNICEF and like he champions like kids in the world and so on. So it's very cool when actors use their platform for some, you know, really good causes.
Yeah, nowadays a lot of people are using their social media platforms to like better the world. I know one of the YouTubers I follow, Superwoman, she had a whole campaign on getting girls in Africa to go to school. So it's amazing what they can do with a few million subscribers.
Yeah, and a lot of it starts with education, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So then looking at, let's see. Yeah. So the Brothers Trust, I mean, I think that's a very cool endeavor. So Audrey, you watched the trailer, I'm assuming.
Yes, I did. I watched it 6 minutes after it dropped.
Wait, you waited that long?
It dropped. It was a surprise drop. So this is one of those trailers that it dropped and I found out about it and I was watching it. And then Audrey said, I already saw it. I saw it, you know, 6 minutes after it dropped. But go ahead.
Yeah. So they had been talking about releasing it for a couple weeks. And they're like, oh, we're going to release it tomorrow at this time. Didn't happen. Then they were like, oh, we're going to wait a couple more weeks. And then Tom Holland tweeted that he was going to talk to Sony about asking. This was the day before it released. Then during a live stream, he dropped the trailer and then he replied to his tweet, this is what I could do, and linked the official teaser trailer. And I believe that was around 5:45, I want to say.
5:45 in the morning on the West Coast. So he's hitting it about, 8:45, about 9 o'clock on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I don't know which coast he's on, but I think they probably pegged it to the East Coast.
Yes, but it was great because I first went to his Instagram to see it. Then I went to YouTube. Then I just saw like a bunch of people posting videos about them seeing it.
So what you're telling me is in the morning, because we take the phone away from you, in the morning you got up to go to the bathroom. You got your phone. And while you're in the bathroom first thing in the morning, this is what you were doing.
Yes. Okay. Watching the Far From Home trailer.
Noted.
Well, and what she forgot to tell you was she watched it 6 minutes after it dropped, then 8 minutes after it dropped, then 10 minutes after it dropped, then 12 minutes after it dropped.
That's why I was yelling, Audrey, what are you doing in the bathroom so long?
Yeah. So what's your opinion of it? Let's hear it.
I think it's a very cool trailer. It gives you a very good overlook of what's going to happen in the movie. Him finally telling his aunt about him being Spider-Man, then coming out into the open being like, sup New York, I'm Spider-Man, and like, it's going to be great. Then he goes on a school trip with his best friend Ned, and then Nick Fury crashes it.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool to get your summer vacation crashed by Nick Fury.
Let's just say Nick Fury has an amazing dance card because he's in Captain Marvel, Spider-Man Far From Home. He was in the actual little bit at the end after the after credit scene in Infinity War. You know, he's all over the place. He's in all these blockbuster movies.
He's even in Pulp Fiction.
And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger, those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
So what What happened to superheroes not identifying themselves as their alter ego? Why is his mask off and why do people know who he is?
Well, he never showed who he was, but I think they don't show because so they can protect the people they love, you know?
That's normally how they do it.
Right, but why is he doing it now, though?
I think that there's an inherent problem with the original Spider-Man trilogy. So my problem with the original Spider-Man trilogy is the fact that he has the Spider-Man hood, mask, costume on the majority of the time, and the CG is not 100% great. It's as good as it was for the time, but you could tell it's kind of computer generated at points, and when you have the mask of Spider-Man on, you kind of have a disconnect.
Okay.
And when you have the Iron Man trilogy, you can see that Jon Favreau, through the trilogy, he takes Iron Man's mask off more and more through the movie progression. So I definitely think that when you need to connect to a person who's playing a role, it's better to have their mask off. I think we'll get into this a little bit, but Mysterio, when you talk about Mysterio as the Jake Gyllenhaal character in this Spider-Man movie.
And is he a good guy or a bad guy?
See,
So there was a press tour in...
It's Mysterio!
There was a press tour in South America, and they were the people in there seeing Tom Holland talk about it, saw the trailer, and there were sources telling you that you saw Mysterio in it. And I watched this video, and it was talking about how the guy who's doing the video thought that Mysterio would double cross Spider-Man, make him think he's working with him, and then backstab him, but then backstab the bad people.
So Mysterio is a tortured character, ambiguous whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, but all the comic books that I've seen Mysterio is that he spends more time as the vapor, as the smoke monster than anything else. And when he has the domed hood on, you know, he's actually smoke within this costume, within this suit of who he was. So again, this is another thing where an audience can connect more easily with something that is human, you know? So I think that idea, when you take the mask off more frequently, it allows the audience to connect more readily to the lead character.
So Mysterio, is he also the water creature?
No.
Supposedly, no, that's a bad guy.
Supposedly it's supposed to be like the four elementals.
Oh, okay.
Fire, water, earth, air, something like that. And then Nick Fury, Mysterio, and Spider-Man are going to stop them from destroying...
Venice.
Yes, Venice.
It's just an excuse to go to Venice. That's all these are.
Is Nick Fury a bad guy?
No, Nick Fury's the good guy.
Hush your mouth.
He's a good guy.
No, I'm saying Jimmy. Don't even think that he's a bad guy. Nick Fury's the best guy.
He's the best guy? Then why is he shooting the one guy in the neck with a dart?
Because it's a dart. You know, you got to immobilize people.
Oh, he doesn't kill him. That's true.
No, just, no.
And he wants to roll him over so he doesn't choke on his tongue.
Yes. He doesn't want Ned to die.
That's true. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, see, I'm not into these superheroes. So you gotta educate me. So, okay, I find it a little hard to suspend disbelief sometimes because, like, if you look at, like, the real world, right? Like, and I hate to bring it up, I have to. Like, 9/11 was, like the worst thing that ever happened, right? I mean,
yes.
Huge buildings collapsing.
Yes.
And when you look at the devastation and destruction of these things coming down, like, the aftermath is just like awful, and it's and like we still commemorate it.
Yes,
these movies go like beyond what 9/11 was,
mm-hmm.
with their destruction, but yet it's like, oh, just this one guy is gonna stop it all. Whereas, like, they don't even turn to the militaries of the world, the combined forces of the world's militaries, to stop anything, right? So it's like, I just don't get like the attraction to movies like this. What am I missing?
Well, in Civil War,
thank you.
Technically speaking, the Avengers were government property, so they were the military.
They fell under the military guidelines. And I think the whole idea of Civil War is the idea of collateral damage. And I think the thing that you're talking about is exactly something that these heroes have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. It's like, I think there are many discussions in Civil War between Iron Man and Captain America about
if they're helping or hurting.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they helping? Are they hurting?
Exactly.
And I think Iron Man had fallen in line and said, well, if we weren't here, the world would be a better place because we actually cause a lot of damage.
And that's where I go into saying, like, to save the world, we have to destroy the world.
Right. But Captain America said, like, in rebuttal to that, Captain America says that if we don't act, then our inaction allows these horrible things to happen.
Ooh, boy, that's very, like, social.
Yeah.
That's very Dr. King-ish.
Civil War was definitely the one of the pillars of the Marvel franchise where
they addressed that.
These competing ideologies, they have the family members of people that were killed during Age of Ultron walking up to Tony Stark and putting a picture of their dead son on his chest.
Oh, so they do it. You know, maybe I should watch these and then I'll stop bitching.
The Russo brothers do a good job. They do a good job at trying to address these things. They try to pull it into the real world. They try to say that, hey, real things happen. People die. And regular people dying is important. And we can't focus on it as a movie that's 120 minutes over the course of these, you know, main characters' lives over the course of months. But we will address it in the overarching theme over the phase.
So there's like a cognitive dissonance, as it were, right? I mean, you're trying to hold two competing points of view, let's say, that are opposites, but yet they need to live in harmony together.
Yes.
Right.
In other words, I need to save the world by blowing up the world. Okay, so let me ask you, what is the first of this whole franchise? What's the first movie?
Iron Man. No. Is it Iron Man or
yeah,
is it?
Iron Man.
No, it's yes. It's Captain America, First Avenger.
No, it's Iron Man, then Captain. Hold up. Research time.
All I'm saying is the very first movie here, I thought I was talking to the people who knew. No, the very first movie, whatever that is, along with my training, I'm gonna commit to watching every one of these in 2019.
Really?
To get caught up.
It's Iron Man.
And it's Iron Man.
Iron Man, first film in the series was Iron Man 2008, then Iron Man 2 in 2010, then Thor in 2011, Captain America in 2011, and then from there on.
So Captain America 2011.
You're telling me I've seen the first four?
No, I'm saying the very first one is...
No, I've seen the first four, I'm telling you.
You okay, have? Cool. Wow. Have you seen The Incredible Hulk 2008?
Nope. Oh. Wait, you just said the order was going to 2012, now Incredible Hulk's 2008.
Well, this list was out of order.
I'll have to research it. I'm going to research it.
We'll look it up. We'll look it up. I enjoy this a lot. I want updates as you watch them, and we'll definitely throw that into the what we're watching portion of this.
Yes, I'll have a box of tissue.
Let me know what you're watching because I will watch them along because I forgot The Winter Soldier and I just got a copy of that. So we'll get caught up on that. I'll watch that again the week you watch it.
I'm not going to lie. I've only seen Civil War, Infinity War, and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Wow.
I've only seen three movies.
No, you see Thor.
And Thor Ragnarok. So four movies.
Yeah.
Okay, Ted, how about this? Starting next Saturday and every Saturday thereafter, there's like, what, 18 of these things or something?
There's like 12 or 10 or 20.
Let's see.
Yeah.
12, 10, or 20. You know, when you look at my life, that's a long time. So what we're going to do, we're going to start from the very first one next Saturday. Wait a minute. Do I have to resubscribe to like Netflix Blu-ray or something? I might have to if it requires that.
Technically speaking, there's only four movies in the Marvel franchise, but there's like...
Okay, I've pulled it up. Here we go. Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, Marvel the Avengers. That's phase one.
Phase one?
So phase one is the six movie package.
Okay.
So we'll roll that out.
Well, to not beat this up too much, let's start, whether we have to subscribe to Netflix Blu-ray or whatever we got to do, but let's start. And next Saturday, we'll watch the first, and every Saturday thereafter, we go the rest of the year, and we just get through all the Marvels and get caught up to Far From... And when is Far From Home released?
Far From Home is coming out July 5th this year.
Yes.
We might make it.
We need to make it.
We might make it. And then, if we get through all of these, then in July, we all go to the movies to watch it.
Yes.
Sold.
All right. It's here live, live as it happens on Trailer Junkies Podcast.
But you know what you also need to watch on Netflix? Next Avengers. It's an animated Avengers movie about the kids of the Avengers.
Come on. Don't even get me started.
That's enough. That's enough.
It was a good movie.
I need to get through the movies before I start getting into the kids of the Avengers.
So here's my big thing about the trailer was, okay, there's a couple of pet peeves. It's called a teaser trailer that felt like way too much information to be a teaser trailer.
Wait, that was a teaser?
Yeah, they call it a teaser trailer.
What do you mean there's two?
It's 2.5 minutes.
It's over two minutes. And it has a lot of exposition throughout. So,
wow.
I don't think it falls under the teaser trailer. When you look it up, it's called the teaser trailer.
Brutal.
I don't know why they do that. But at the end, it says that Mysterio's like what? Thor and what?
Iron Man. All rolled in one.
Yeah, he's like Thor and Iron Man all rolled into one. But does that mean that Thor and Iron Man are still alive? Because this is post Infinity War Part 2, which is Endgame, Avengers Endgame.
Ted, I'll let you know in June.
So I feel like those two characters are alive at the end, which would be shocking to me. I think Thor is alive, but I don't think Iron Man makes it out of Endgame.
Well, the thing is, Robert Downey Jr.'s contract is over with them.
Oh, is it?
It is. I know Tom Holland, I think, has a 6-movie contract. I don't know what Robert Downey Jr. has, but I read somewhere that his contract is supposedly over after Endgame.
There you go. From the mouths of babes.
Okay. So if I can ask one last question and we'll move on.
Okay.
So if you look at, you know, whatever, 20 some odd, however many Marvels, you look at all the various Spider-Mans, you look at, you know, just how big of a blockbuster explosion movie thing this is going to become. Do these movies still need trailers to the trailers? I mean, like, anybody who's going to watch it is all, like, you don't need to hook me. Like, if I'm a fan, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I loved, so Marcos last week said, all the tools that are available to you, use them. And I think combine that with your idea of the infinite scroll wheel. If you're scrolling through something and you see that it's the beginning of a slow move, you know, like if you see it's the beginning of a trailer without a trailer to trailer.
Oh, yeah. Like it hasn't hit the turn yet.
It might not hook you, even if you're a fan of Spider-Man, if you don't get that trailer, you don't get that 5-second hit of something that's cool. And on top of that, maybe there are the people out there, and I've actually started to fall into this, where if the trailer-to-trailer is done properly, or if the 6-second hit is done properly, then I'll pause on that thing for the 6-second hit and then move on.
Yeah.
So if they're recording that as a view, and that's what's important to the aggregators and to the people that are compiling the information.
So they can get paid.
Yeah. So I think that's something on top of it. Like, I've seen the trailer before. I don't want to see the whole trailer again, but I'll watch the cool 10 seconds of action at the top of it.
Yeah, I guess at some point there's like a psychological bent behind it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, because there are some people who like to watch the trailer over and over again so they can like dive deeper, even if they are already hooked. Some people are like on the edge of their seats waiting for the next trailer release so they know that their suspicions are correct or that they were incorrect and that something amazing is going to happen in this movie.
Does Tom Holland tell you when the next one's coming out? Next trailer's coming out?
He said he was going to talk.
No, Ted, because you take her phone away from her at night.
She's Sony.
How could he call her, right?
No, but he does give out like comments on Instagram posts or like tweets or stuff where it's like, I'll talk to Sony or like possibly next week at 2 p.m. I don't know though. So
I loved it. I love that this kid, how old is he?
22.
He's 22. I love this 22-year-old kid's like, let me talk to Sony. And he's like calling the big wigs at Sony. And they're like, I don't know, Todd. Let's see what we can
Todd?
Do for you.
Oh, no.
So, Audrey, okay, it's not, you know, Spider-Man, blah, 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 right? Just some odd trailer or whatever the content is. How are you as a almost 13-year-old, how are you gathering your content or gaining your content or how are you getting to it or how is it getting to you?
So most of the time, unless it's a movie I'm really looking forward to, I don't go searching for trailers unless it pops up in my main YouTube feed or like it's an ad before for a video or it's an Instagram ad, I don't usually look for something. Or as a good segue to the next thing.
This is my daughter.
If it's a trailer on Netflix, cough, Carmen Sandiego, then I'd watch that. But I'm not purposely looking for it.
So this is the perfect segue.
Well, hold on 1 second. we'll get to the segue in a second. So Audrey, is it safe to say then that you subscribe to like various YouTube channels and then through those they deliver the content?
I don't think I've subscribed.
Because you mentioned getting it through a YouTube feed or something.
Yeah, if it's like trending or it's something they think I'd like, that's usually like from their algorithm. I don't think I subscribe to any movie.
So I think what the people that she's watching, she watches on Instagram. And I think Instagram, as far as the social space, correct me if I'm wrong, is the go-to social space for what she's consuming. And then YouTube is like a byproduct of it, as far as like videos on Instagram will direct you to YouTube. I would even say Superwoman, you watch her mainly on Instagram.
No, so the thing with YouTube nowadays is they have YouTube TV and then regular YouTube. And then it's the same on Instagram. They have like a specific vertical video, which is like, it's very different. So Superwoman, she's mainly a YouTuber. So I go to YouTube for her, but I see like when she's like, oh, I've uploaded a new video, I see that on Instagram.
Is that Lily Singh?
Yes, that is.
Oh, okay. And why is she Superwoman?
I don't know, but now she's going just as Lily.
Oh, she's moving to Lily?
Oh, okay.
I like her message.
14.5 million subscribers.
Yes.
Wow.
Lily Singh.
I like her message. She's, you know, girl power, empowering women.
She was the one who did what I was talking about earlier, sending girls in Africa to school.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I mean, and the reason I ask is because sometimes I know before doing this show, what Clarissa and I would do is we'd say, hey, let's go to the movies tonight. All right, let's see what's playing. And then we just go check out trailers and be like, that looks good. And then we just go watch it. Right. But like, how do people or adolescents and teens, same thing, how do they find out, you know, like what's playing or what's like gaining traction and stuff? I mean, like, you know, 8-9 months before the movies come out, and what's really getting, the vibe sort of.
See, the thing I think with the people my age is I know some people who are like on top of everything and they see like every single trailer. And then I know some people who are like, if I see it, I see it. And if I don't, oh, well.
They pay attention because MTV said so. Is that right, or?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
What's MTV? I don't think anybody that's 13 knows what MTV is.
I know what MTV
Unplugged
is.
Oh, for real?
I know what MTV Unplugged is, but that's only because a singer I like did it.
Shawn Mendes?
Yes.
All right, so Todd Holland has some competition.
Todd Holland? It's Tom.
Oh, sorry. Tom Holland has competition.
I love episodes where we screw
the
up,
Hollanders
Ted.
The Hollanders are going to come for you.
I wish. So Mr. Holland has competition with Shawn Mendes.
Yes.
And which one's better?
No.
No. No comment.
No comment here.
Oh, okay. All right. So you said we had a segue into Carmen Sandiego.
Yes.
So when you talk about how kids or how people are watching new things, and this will also get into the Fire Doc and all the zeitgeist. Netflix has definitely done a number on its subscribers as far as what it's serving up to us. So I said, you know, Audrey was watching Carmen Sandiego. I saw the trailer for Carmen Sandiego independently a while ago. But I'll let her, go ahead, you explain how.
So I think a Saturday ago or two, I was watching a TV show on Netflix, and I just entered on the computer to Netflix, and you know, there's that giant...
The giant banner,
and I see Carmen Sandiego, and I'm like, oh my God, nostalgic, because I remember.
Why does that name sound familiar to me?
Because it was a video game.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? It was a video game from when we were children.
Hey, this is Live as It Happens.
But yeah, it was a video game that I think I played. I was either in second or third grade. I wasn't that good.
Oh, it was a video game. Okay.
It was like a computer game. But the trailer, usually how you can like scroll down and the trailer will stop. For some reason on this, I didn't scroll down and I kept watching and it seemed like really cool. And then I got a minute into the TV show, then I had to go do something. But the trailer was really good. It told a good story and it really hooked me into this series. Like now I want to go watch it. And I just don't want to binge it. I want to like spread it out over the weeks so I have something like every week to watch.
Is there a name to this style of animation?
No, I don't know. I would call it just stylized animation, but I don't think it has a specific name.
Because I've seen this type of animation before, and then I've seen like the Flintstones animation, and I've seen anime, you know, as a couple of different, you know, like Hanna-Barbera type stuff and so on. But this has a very stylized animation, but I don't know if there's a name to it or not.
I don't know what it's called, but I really like it. It looks really nice.
But I think Carmen Sandiego is like Omar Little.
What's Omar Little?
Who's Omar Little?
You know, Omar stole from the other drug dealers and Carmen steals from other thieves.
She steals before the thieves can get it.
Right. And Omar goes and gets it from the other drug dealers. You know, The Wire.
Oh, The Wire. I do not remember The Wire.
Spread the word, dog. Omar back.
I'm looking at the Carmen Sandiego poster right now, and as what's that line called where it's like
the log line?
Yes, it says she's back.
So if I can assume, and maybe I will, is this directed, and I don't mean directed like as in a director, but I mean like as in geared towards adults more than kids?
I don't think so.
So you think it's more for kids than adults?
I think it's for families.
Oh, okay.
I think it's for everyone. Like, if you're an adult, you could watch it. If you're a kid, you can watch it. Because it's got names that, like, people know. Like, Cass.
Like, what's the cutoff in age? I mean, I don't know if I show it to my kids who are 4 and 5.
Audrey will give it a view and see, yes, and let you know. But it's definitely a co-viewing experience is what Audrey's talking about.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Where you can watch it with your kids and your kids can watch it with the parents. There's something there for the parents as well. It has one of the leads from Stranger Things, which I don't think, you know, under 10-year-olds are watching. So that's definitely for adults.
And I hope Audrey takes no offense, but I might trust Bryce more. Because Bryce seems to be a more sensitive character when it comes to things that are less appropriate for him.
Mm. Yes.
Would you say that's true?
I don't watch a lot of like scary stuff. So.
And Audrey does some gatekeeping for Bryce too.
Yeah.
No matter how much we tell her, she doesn't have to. That's not her job.
Well, because he thinks he can watch scary stuff, but he'll just get scared, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're looking at Common Sense Media, and I think Common Sense Media says seven plus.
Okay. So it's family, but it's like more like later elementary school and on like family viewing.
The parents on Common Sense Media say 4 and up. The children, funnily enough, say the older age, 7 and up.
Yeah, okay.
So both Google and Netflix have direct links to Common Sense Media for their recommendations as far as viewing recommendations, as far as age.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. You know, I think the overall issue I have with Netflix, like last night we were on looking for something to watch and all right, well, let's see what's on. And boys went to bed and I was a little tired and I didn't want to get into a movie. So we were looking at like just, you know, something 30 minutes worthy. And there's so much on that you watch all of the trailers as you mouse over it or you like move over it, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That like 45 minutes later, you're like, all right, let's go to bed. We saw the movie. You know, and you watch nothing, you know, like.
But then it puts like seeds in your head where you're like, oh, I remember this trailer. It stood out to me. And oh, maybe we should go back and look at that. And maybe we should watch that. And oh, did you see that movie? I know we weren't looking for a movie last night, but today, would you look at the time? There's a couple of hours before you have to go to sleep. Why don't we watch a movie?
You know what I call that? Paralysis by analysis. There's so much on there. You're looking at so much. It paralyzes you that you watch nothing and just go to bed.
And I think that will lead us into, do you have anything else you'd like to add, Audrey? You're good?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
All right, Audrey. Hey, I had a good time too. I'm always, excited when you are on the show and give your adolescent insights, because they really are inviting and intriguing.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. All right. You have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
See you.
Have fun.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
So, Ted.
So.
Now we are done with Carmen Sandiego and we are done with Spider-Man. I saw there was a brief Ghostbusters 2020 teaser.
So, the Ghostbusters 2020 teaser and the whole Netflix conversation kind of dovetailed together.
So, since they dovetail together, how about we take a break?
Okay, let's do that.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at T Junkies Podcast and Instagram at Trailer Junkies Podcast. You can also comment on the episodes at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com, and you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, and we're back.
And we're back.
So Ghostbusters and Netflix have an intersection.
So there's a little bit of intersectionality here. So Ghostbusters recently, they released a teaser. Now, this is a true teaser trailer because the...
Oh, for sure.
The Ghostbusters movie, the reboot, is not coming out till 2020, and it's 2019. And this is... All it is a couple of proton packs powering up, a little music cue.
Oh, is that what those were, proton packs?
That's what the sound is. And then the music cue is the music from Ghostbusters and a reveal of Ecto-1, which is the Ghostbusters mobile under a tarp. So it was released by Jason Reitman, who is the son of the original Ghostbusters director and a director in his own right. And he's being tapped to reboot this franchise. So his tweet came out and it said, "Everybody can relax. I found the car. #GB20. And then he posted this video to it. And I later went on to YouTube to check out to see if the video's there. The video's there all over the place, but there's no official release of the video, or at least there wasn't at the time that I was researching it this week. So I went back in, and because of what I'm going for as far as being, fooled a couple of times, we stuck with this Jason Reitman tweet as our posting of the video, because that is as close to the source as you can get. So it was released by the proposed director who has signed, the deal to direct it and put together the money and the effects to get this piece done, to make this announcement that he's going to be the director. But beyond that, there's no official push. So this is why I say it kind of dovetails into the Fyre documentary, where the Fyre Festival was set up by supermodels and by influencers and all of that. But I had wanted to watch the Fyre documentary for weeks since it came out.
Well, it came out January 18th. I mean, I think it was 18th. It was only like a week ago.
Yeah. So 10 days, whatever it's been, but I didn't watch it until Friday. So I think when you say analysis, paralysis by analysis, and you're talking about, just scrolling through your Netflix feed, I think Netflix has done something interesting where they have identified material that they put on their platform that they will promote internally. And then they do a huge social push on it.
Promote internally, meaning on the app itself.
On the app itself.
Okay, yeah.
So for the most part, you and I would log on to our Netflix accounts and would see different things.
Kind of like now I'm seeing the Ted Bundy thing.
Right. When things release, because they have so much content releasing at the same time, I think they have segmented their audience into groups so they can easily, deliver content to you. But after I scroll through my feed for half an hour and I don't see anything that I want to see, I pass by the Fyre doc multiple times over the course of the week.
Right.
But only when people at work, it reaches a zeitgeist peak where people at work are talking about it. People online are talking about it. You are talking about it. You said you saw it. And I was like, all right, if Jimmy saw it, then I have to go and watch it. So,
well, my friend Paul turned me onto it. So that's how I learned about it.
Right. right. So we're not, the feed is nice to scroll through and it's a nice thing to pass the time. But I think what Netflix is finding and what we're kind of proving out is that we go to Netflix to watch something specific.
Isn't that we're tidying up to kind of came in? Like that was the zeitgeist of what was going on.
Exactly. So I think while we know that everything is available to us, as far as us making a decision of what we're going to watch, it isn't going to really happen. It's not going to happen that way. We're going to need other external forces applied to our social ability. So I think it's interesting that Netflix offers all the content that they offer, but they still have to go outside of it and figure out a way to market things to make us specifically seek the media out. Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean, in other words, I think that the people who are subscribed and who log in on a regular basis, and I would say a regular basis would be, I don't know, what would you say, 5 days a week?
Yeah.
Okay, regular basis. They're going to see what's on Netflix and they're going to seek out what's on Netflix. But the social media side of things and that, you know, the zeitgeist, as you say, maybe that's the people who don't yet have Netflix, and maybe the people who are on Netflix but don't pay attention other than the few things that they want to see. I don't know.
I think so. It used to be that prime time was the way that people were driven to watch things. And I think Marco said it last week too, that you want to have a discussion on Monday about the things that people watched on Sunday. And that's where Sunday's HBO shows come into play. Whether it's Westworld or Game of Thrones, you want to go into work Monday morning with the knowledge of the show that just aired over the weekend. So because of binge watching, because of binge racing, because of all the different ways you can watch, I think a way for Netflix to get people on the same page was to push out into the social media space the idea of this week, everybody's going to be into Bird Box. So we're going to push really hard in all of our social platforms on Bird Box and see what happens. And I think when that exploded out and people really caught on to it and liked it and started doing it, brought it into the real world in a way that few things actually come into the real world. You know, they talk about it a little bit in that Ben Thompson article where at the basketball game, people are at halftime shows, people are doing the Bird Box challenge, you know? So it,
right.
It's a way of marketing that really goes much deeper into the psychology of what people are doing when they watch media or when they watch consumer media. You know, watching the actual piece of art is a value unto itself, but being in the conversation is really the value that is unspoken and driven home by their new marketing methodology.
Okay, yeah, I think I get that. You know, I was also thinking, you know, you brought up Game of Thrones, you know, on HBO, and I'm going to watch all of the Marvels, right? So I think we call it the Trailer Junkies Challenge. So all the Trailer Junkies out there who listen, who subscribe and fans, we go through all the Marvels. And then, you know, I think the last season is supposed to be this April on HBO, which I hope so, because, man, it's like, it's unbelievable. But then we got, so as much as I, well.
You're going to take one for the team by watching the Marvel stuff. And you want me to take one for the team by watching Game of Thrones.
Yes. Yes. And then we'll cover both.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, I don't expect you to watch all of the Game of Thrones, like all the seasons before April.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could if you want to, and I'd be into it because I've seen them all a few times. And I would do that all over again. I mean, I love that show, but we call it the Trailer Junkies Challenge.
Okay, cool. See how many I can get through before, and then we'll see where I pick it up.
And then I'll do all the Marvels.
Okay, cool.
Oh, man. You know what the best is?
What's that?
That Ted is not a fantasy, like... guy, and I'm not a superhero guy, but yet we're gonna like do it for each other.
We gotta step out of our comfort zones.
Exactly. I love it. Okay, so Ghostbusters 2020.
Yes,
let's lay it out there. I'm a fan, right?
Okay, what's Carly Rae Jepsen's song? What's the name of her song?
Call Me Maybe.
So they should do a mashup of Call Me Maybe. Who you gonna call?
That's amazing. I love it. I love it. But you know what this teaser reminds me of?
What's that?
Like, you're just cruising along through Pennsylvania on some back road, and all of a sudden, like, in some old lady, you know, you stop, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're like, oh, you know, there's a little farm stand, like the little old lady in Pennsylvania selling cherries. And it's a windy day, and you look in her barn, and the wind is blowing the back of like an old, like, a cherry 50, cherry, you get it? 57 Chevy.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'll buy that. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. It was my husband's. I'll sell it for like $1,000, you know, cause she doesn't know what she has, but you're like, you know, I'm kind. I'll give you 1500. But that's kind of what that reminds me of when you look in the barn and the winds blow. Like, it's one of those like old like stories that you hear of with like a 57 Chevy, like find, you know, or like a 68 Impala, you know, like in a barn.
Right.
I love that. I love that. So my first question was, are the sparks a ghost? But you said no.
They're the proton packs charging up.
So what's causing it to charge, do you think?
I don't know.
Or is it just part of the tease?
I don't know. I just want to hear more. I want to see more.
Yeah, me too.
I'm interested to see what Jason does with the whole marketing campaign, whether he's going to do the cast announcement. It feels like if this is what the director announcement looks like, where you get this high quality of a teaser trailer, then when the cast gets announced, I expect another teaser trailer that is of top dollar quality.
Like, overall, I mean, is this a reboot of the 84 version?
Yes. I think we're sidestepping the all-female Ghostbusters, which is sad because I thought it was a great film unto itself. But Bill Murray is rumored to be an actor in this, and I think he was in the last one. He was in the all-female cast, but I don't know that he was as himself. I think he was.
So do you think this is like a handoff to say, you know, I'm passing the torch?
I think so. And hopefully it has all of the Ghostbusters from the original two movies. And then I think that's the other reason it's called Ghostbusters 2020 or GB20, because they don't want to necessarily call it Ghostbusters 3, because that kind of diminishes the contribution of the all-female Ghostbusters, which I think was great.
So in a way, they're going to hand it off similar to like a Star Trek movie.
Yes.
Yeah, where Kirk comes in, does his little cameo, and then it goes into the new cast.
Yes.
You think it's going to be something like that?
It'll be like First Contact all over again.
Just who the hell are you?
He's James T. Kirk. Don't you read history?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this is one to go see. It's like right in my wheelhouse. I was, 13, 14 years old when the other one came out and loved it.
Have your kids seen them?
No, they love the song.
Oh, okay, they love the song.
But I think...
they're a little young for it, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit, you know, when they're floating above the bed doing all the crazy stuff. You know, it's just too much for their age right now.
We've actually kept it from our kids as well for the same reason. The innuendo, a little much.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, like, you can explain out how, like, the demonism and all this stuff is just, like, movie satire or whatever it might be. But, like, in their mind, they see that stuff as real, you know?
Right.
And I don't need them having nightmares because, you know, the gatekeeper and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, it's like we're like, camping. And then all of a sudden marshmallows are coming after them, you know, and yeah, we're kind of waiting on it a little bit, but the song's okay. The song's okay. No, but I think as a tease, this is like the quintessential, like perfect tease, because you already know what Ghostbusters is.
Yes.
And it just brings in the lightning storm, blows back and shows you the ghost with the circle with the line through it and cuts out.
Yep.
I mean, like,
yeah,
it just teased it. You're like, whoa.
Total tease.
You know, it's like as if it came up and had you had the Star Wars logo. I mean, like, everybody knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Well done, Jason.
All right. So, Ted, I know you said your beer was a little bit like Blue Moon, whatever. How's it finishing?
It finished as it started. Not my favorite.
Okay.
A solid IPA, a little too floral and orange, a little too citrus. I prefer like the Citradelic over this. So we'll see how this goes. I have a couple more, so I'll see how they are with curry, with some with some Indian food.
Well, you already had with your dad. So. Yeah.
But I was the dad in it, so.
Exactly. Well, okay, go across the street, bring him to France.
That's right. We'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. My beer, well, it's gone. Arguably one of the best I've ever brewed, I think.
Nice.
You know, the thing is, I would say one's enough, though, because it's like so powerful that two would, I mean, if you're looking to get smashed, yeah, I have another one, but one's enough.
What's your ABV again?
It's about 12.
12%. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty high. So, you know, and I shared it with Clarissa, but if you're, I mean, you know, these are big Belgian bottles, but if you're going to, like, if you want to really get smashed, just open two bottles, like, and you're just going to be like the room, you're going to have like the bed spins, you know, where you got to put your foot on the floor to stop it, you know?
Awesome.
All right, man. Hey, you have a good day. I'll get this thing edited and we'll rock and roll.
Awesome. See you next week.
All right, Ted.
Bye.
Bye, man.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.